You may not be able to identify these birds, but Phoebe Snetsinger probably could. Snetsinger is the subject of a new book called Life List, a woman's quest for the world's most amazing birds. Olivia Gentile is the author of Life List. About 11 years ago, Gentile fell in love with a bird watcher. She discovered that he was clinically depressed and that birding was his salvation. Olivia Gentile told Anne Strangechamps what happened next.
Long after we broke up, I decided I wanted to write about bird watchers, or maybe a bird watcher. So I called up some birding clubs near my home in Manhattan. By then I was living in Manhattan. And a man at the Long Island Bird Club misunderstood the reason for my call. And he thought that I wanted to join the club. And he said, yeah, we don't get a lot of young women in our club, but you should come join. Who knows? Maybe you'll be the next Phoebe Snetsinger. And a couple weeks later, I was in St. Louis interviewing her widower.
So what was it about Phoebe Snetsinger that so captured your attention?
Well, all he said, all this man said, was that she had seen more bird species than anyone in history. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting, you know, that she saw more bird species than anyone in history. So I Googled her, and I saw that there was a New York Times obituary which mentioned that she had once been a housewife, you know, a very typical suburban housewife with four children, and that the real change in her life had come when she was diagnosed with melanoma and told she had less than a year to live. And she decided to spend that year traveling the world in search of birds. And she ended up outliving her prognosis by 18 years. And as I learned that first day, seeing more bird species than anyone in history. So I thought, not only was the second half of her life fascinating, but the contrast to the first half of her life really interested me.
Birding really took off for Phoebe Snetsinger after she was diagnosed with terminal cancer. She was told she had a year, less than a year to live.
Mm-hmm. She did not question that diagnosis. She did not say, I'm going to defy my doctor's expectations. She was very accepting. She had a scientific background. She had wanted to be a scientist. And she believed these scientists who told her that that was it. And meanwhile, she'd been dreaming of traveling the world to see birds for ages. But her kids were still fairly young. Her kids were still in high school and college. And she just hadn't gotten around to taking a lot of trips yet. So as soon as she got this diagnosis, she decided, you know, well, I don't feel sick yet, and there aren't any good treatments, so I'm going to go for it. I'm going to see as many birds as I can during whatever time I have left. And she went from being utterly devastated, of course, as we all would be if we were told we had only a year to live, to incredibly alive and joyful within a couple months because she managed to live in the moment in a way that I think few of us can.
She was an amazingly brave woman. I mean, just glancing through your book, you know, she went hiking around Nepal on a trip in which another birding companion died of altitude sickness. She was birding during, a major earthquake in Ecuador. She survived tribal warfare in New Guinea. Didn't she ever think maybe she should stop taking such risks?
Well, and then what happened shortly after she survived that tribal warfare, she went back to New Guinea. And this was in 1986, about 5 years after her cancer diagnosis. And she had never been so happy. She just was having a ball. For these 5 years, she had lived exactly the life that she'd always wanted to live. And she was traveling about 6 months a year, I would say. And she went to New Guinea, this time with just one other person. And she was birding with this one other person at some remote sewage ponds outside the capital of New Guinea, Port Moresby. And they got assaulted by five thugs who kidnapped them, stuffed them in their own rental car, and took them to an even more remote pond and gang-raped Phoebe. Then they talked about how they were going to kill Phoebe and her friend. Her friend was a man, and that's why he was not also gang-raped. And Phoebe and her friend managed to escape while these guys were trying to figure out how to kill them. You might think that this episode would have made her think that she should not be doing things like this.
Well, it sounds like a shattering experience. You'd think she would come home deeply traumatized.
Well, she was extremely traumatized. But trauma works in funny ways, I suppose. And it made her just redouble her efforts to see birds around the world. It made her decide, you know, she's not going to let, as she said, these bastards win. And she started taking even more trips to even more remote places and spending, say, 9 months of the year on the road instead of six, and going up more severe mountains and staying in even less, you know, reputable hotels and campgrounds. And
so her birding took on a kind of driven quality then.
Her birding became darker and more compulsive after she was raped. She never really talked about the rape with anyone. She didn't want to get counseling. She just said, I don't want it to slow me down. I'm fine. I just want to keep going, and I just want to keep seeing more birds. But she changed dramatically after the rape in that, like I said, it became a little bit less joyful for her and more of a compulsion. And that's when she really started talking about seeing more bird species than anyone in history.
How did Phoebe Snetsinger die?
Well, after she reached 8,000, she claimed that she was going to slow down. Her husband very much wanted her to. He had wanted a divorce. And she
kind of hard to be married to somebody who leaves for birding trips for 9 months of the year.
Absolutely. But, you know, he loved her and he understood that she had made a lot of sacrifices earlier in the marriage and that birding really was so important to her. So he was willing to wait for her until she had seen her 8,000 species, which did make her a celebrity in the birding world and got her a lot of recognition that she might have gotten, you know, through a career otherwise if she'd lived in a different era or had a different trajectory. So he was willing to wait, but she didn't really slow down after 8,000. She did start to take more pleasure in birding again and take trips that she wanted to take for the quality of the birds rather than the quantity. So it was a happier time for her, but she didn't really slow down. And moreover, her body started to break down because by this time she was in her late 60s. So the way she died was she had actually sprained her ankle in Madagascar on this trip. This was in 1999. And because she had sprained her ankle, she was sitting across both aisles of the bus, if you can picture a kind of school bus. She had her feet up. She was sitting with her back to the bus windows. And this bus hit a concrete abutment and rolled over. Phoebe was sleeping at the time. And unfortunately, the back of her head was what took the impact. So no one else actually in this bus was seriously hurt. But because of the way Phoebe was sitting and because she was asleep, she died.
How many birds did she wind up with on her life list?
Well, you know, it depends on the taxonomy, but about 8,400 out of 10,000, which is incredible when you consider that, you know, anyone who sort of takes a bunch of trips can probably see 4,000 or 5,000 bird species. You wouldn't be able to identify them on your own the way Phoebe could. I mean, Phoebe really learned these birds like an ornithologist would. You could see these birds and be shown these birds. But in order to see birds after you get to 5,000, you really have to suffer for them. And you have to do kind of crazy things. And you have to exert yourself in a way that most of us would not. And so really those last few hundred birds that she saw probably took her about 5 years to see. And even though she was seeing thousands of birds a year, you know, back in the 80s.
You know, there's one small moment out of your whole book that really, really sticks in my mind when I think about Phoebe, and it's not even about birds. It was a family trip she was on. Her kids were grown, and they all went together to Africa. And there was one night they were staying at a lodge, and outside some elephants showed up and were bathing in a river or something right there. And they were all standing around outside. It was dusk, watching the elephants. And after a while, everybody else went inside and it was bedtime. And her daughter came and said, you know, Mom, aren't you coming to bed? And Phoebe said, oh, no, it's not every night I get to see elephants. And she must have spent several more hours just sitting outside there, just watching the elephants. I keep thinking about that, and partly it makes me wonder, do you have a particular memory out of all of the other, you know, a particular image of Phoebe out of all of those that you discovered?
Yeah, you know, I love that image. Another one, there's a very well-known and well-respected birder named Robert Ridgely who led her on one of her early trips to South America. And when I interviewed him, he said that, you know, back in those days in the early 80s, Phoebe was still a novice world birder. She knew how to identify the birds at home, but she didn't really know a lot of the birds in South America. And almost every bird she saw was a life bird, a new bird. And when she saw a bird she was really excited about, according to Bob, she would jump up and down and punch the air and smile so wide that her eyes were little slits. And just that image of Phoebe, just pure joy and, you know, pure exuberance is something that really has stuck with me.
Olivia Gentile is the author of Life List, A Woman's Quest for the World's Most Amazing Birds. She spoke with Anne Strainchamps.